County. Again, this is State versus Michael Kirchheim.
Morning, Ed, please, my lord. Paul Cooney here on behalf of the appellate Astrid Kirchheim. Variety of issues that are presented in this appeal. First, whether the district will err in ordering the motion to suppress, which address the law enforcement conduct, both in terms of seizure, search, proceeding, Two, whether there was sufficient evidence that is admissible presented at the stipulated bench trial to support a verdict of guilty. Three, whether Mr. Kirchheim was provided effective assistance of trial counsel in this matter. Four, whether the district court erred in enhancing the additional criminal statute to additional criminal status and sentence as such. And then finally, whether the court entered a just and full just sentence. With respect to the first two issues, the motions to suppress and the sufficiency of the judicial evidence of the stipulated bench trial is essentially a combined argument. Position is that the district court erred in concluding that there was reasonable suspicion for law enforcement to conduct seizure of Mr. Kirchheim. Essentially, what's happening is about 4:45 in the morning, law enforcement's conducting routine patrol. They're doing random checks of license plates. Random check of the license plate in which Mr. Kirchheim was operating the vehicle indicated that the owner was under license suspension. Law enforcement then tries to identify the driver, wasn't capable of doing that with any certainty. Essentially follows Mr. Kirchheim. Mr. Kirchheim leaves the road, goes into a parking lot, parks in the stalls, no observed law violations. Law enforcement officers parks in an odd way in terms of the stalls. I would suggest that constitutes a seizure such that a reasonable person in Mr. Kirchheim's position would believe that they were not free to leave. I agree that it was not an entire inability for Mr. Kirchheim. That's true. But that's not really the same. It's just whether a reasonable person in that position would feel that they're free to leave. And I think that all of us, driving vehicles, parking in the parking lot, when we're parked properly in the stall, and there's somebody else who's either coming or going or sort of in an odd stationary position, we don't back out. It's just not safe to do so. We don't feel like that's a free opportunity to be mobile. So I think that in that. That's the evidence, is that there was 1 foot outside of the vehicle, so yes, in the process of exiting the vehicle. Law enforcement approaches, and at that point, it's our position that the law enforcement was able to dispel any suspicions that Mr. Kirchheim was actually a registered owner and under suspicion, or under suspension. Law enforcement didn't do that, rather asks Mr. Kirchheim what his name is. Mr. Kirchheim reveals his question. Law enforcement then asks for identity, so some proof of identity. I do. I don't believe that this is a consensual encounter. I believe that law enforcement, I believe that Judge Burns is correct in concluding that this was a constitutional event, a seizure event, or imminent seizure. The question was whether it was unreasonable. And if in fact it was a reasonable suspicion to conduct a traffic stop, then absolutely law enforcement can obtain identity information.
And then the car owner was revealed to be or have a suspended license, and why is there a reasonable basis to stop and check?
I don't, unless the officer has reason to suspicion that he's operator of the vehicle. I don't believe so, Judge. I don't believe so. In fact, I think that if the officer knew or had reason to believe that the driver was in fact the owner that was under suspension, that there would have been a traditional traffic stop. It wasn't.
You don't have any issue with the randomness of running license plates for any reason.
Me personally or constitutionally?
You didn't challenge.
No, constitutionally, I believe that yes, information that's subject to plain public view and that the officer is entitled to conduct those sort of hiring checks, yes. I don't believe there's any constitutional barrier to that. Question is whether, after learning that the owner is suspended, that gives rise to reasonable suspicion that the officer can stop this vehicle. I don't think that that's true.
Are you saying there was just absolutely no similarity? In other words, if it had been a female driver and it was a male, that would be very valid.
Correct.
But in this case, weren't there some similarities in your identity of the man?
I would say that there were similarities in terms of age and gender.
Even beard, right?
That's correct. It was facial hair. That's correct. But not to the degree that the officer felt with certainty that the driver was in fact a vehicle, which was the year's suspension.
This is what you're saying. Now, I've been not convinced that he was longer, he was not convinced that he was not.
And I think that that's exactly right, Judge. But the question is whether it was a reasonable suspicion given the information that was available to law enforcement at the time when the seizures occurred. And that's the issue. I don't believe that there was reasonable suspicion with respect to identity that the operator, Mr. Kirkhoff, the person on the vehicle, was the David Cole to the vehicle. That there was information that there was a suspension.
Was there any information or any evidence or testimony that the officer knew Mr. Cole?
No, not that I can verify.
Or any dependent?
No, not that I can
verify. Was the officer, utilizing just a description of the computer license or license.
My understanding was that there was a closer. I wasn't trial counsel, but my understanding from the review of the available record that's been presented to this court and available to me, that it was a photograph. So the officer did have the actual photograph to compare. And that it's our position because of that, that any belief that Kirkhoff was Coles or been spelled by the officer who knows their job, obviously.
I'm sorry, Judge. Did the officer testify that when he stopped the vehicle, he wasn't sure who the driver actually was, he didn't know whether that was actually.
That's correct.
That's why you want to see the investigation.
Well,
I think you should hold out to make sure that
I do, Judge. I think that's exactly right. That's the available information to law enforcement that does not involve any conduct on the innocent citizen that's operating the vehicle. And so yes, I think that that's precisely the analysis, the constitutional analysis, is what information available to law enforcement at the time of the seizure would have concluded either reasonable or to dispel concerns regarding surveillance. I'd like to just talk very briefly about the ineffective assistance claims. Essentially three. I'd like to focus on the issue regarding judicial criminal sentencing enhancement. There were two hearings with respect to enhancement. First hearing, the state presented evidence, and the state wanted to proceed at that time. They didn't ask for a delay. They were prepared to proceed after the conclusion of guilt. State introduced some exhibits. Counsel objected to one of the exhibits as being insufficient to establish a valid prior conviction because it didn't establish representation of counsel at a critical stage of the proceeding. State then requested the continuance, the court granted the continuance. State did not, or some of the trial counsel did not object.
In fact, there was a
side
there, some discussions about it.
I won't report as to what happened, what the record is the information available to me. There was a continuance nonetheless. My position is that trial counsel erred by failing to object to the report, erred by continuing to enhance the hearing because there was not an adequate showing of good cause. So both in the court's part and also on counsel's part, that there was erroneous conduct.
And you would agree on that there was not sufficient evidence. We don't know
what occurred during that sidebar.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Dirk Love on behalf of the athlete of the state of Nebraska. On the suppression issue, I pointed out that while I certainly agree with the district court that the officer in this case had reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle on either confirm or dispel the suspicion, then nonetheless, on a de novo review of the law, on the facts of this case, it was a tier one stop, not a tier two stop. And the reason is set forth in my brief, that Officer Tran followed the vehicle and hit park. He approached the vehicle as the driver's side door was open. He explained to the defendant that he was not in trouble, that he just asked him his name, and he asked for identification, and he explained to him why he was asking him for identification. So this is a, without a doubt, in my mind, a tier one encounter with respect to the initial contact. And when the defendant pulled out his wallet and magically a bag of methamphetamine fell on the seat, that's plain view, and certainly the officer had a bit of ground probably cause for this arrest.
Moral of the story, don't carry your drugs with your ID. So would you say that State v. Gilead was decided by our Supreme Court this year where their police crews are actually activated at night as it pulled behind the car, and the Supreme Court decided that was a tier one because there was no use of force, or that's very similar to our case that
Actually, Your Honor, I don't think there's a similarity there. Okay.
You don't?
No.
I mean, in one sense there is, but I think the idea
of activating that light, we don't have an activation of lights in this particular case, which is more of a reason to find that this, in fact, is a tier one.
Yeah, I mean, they said it was a tier one even with the activation.
Even with the activation of light, that's very true. I certainly agree with that. But the activation of lights, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
When the officer had a photograph to compare to the person who stopped, is that any different?
Well, my fact, as I read them and put in brief, is when he ran the vehicle, he came back, and he did have a picture of Mr. Knowles, the reported owner of the vehicle. But he could not, when he pulled up alongside of the vehicle, he couldn't see because the windows were darkened, and also there was a female passenger in the car, and he couldn't see past her. He also testified that, in a very general sense, the driver looked similar to Knowles, but he couldn't be sure either way. That's why he dropped behind following him on the vehicle park. Or juxtaposed his vehicle next to the parked vehicle, got out, walked up, and explained to the defendant why he was approaching. Are you Mr. Knowles, et cetera, that sort of thing, you're not in trouble. Do you have identification? Explain to him why he's trying to figure out who's driving this vehicle, and at that point in time, obviously, when the drugs come out, as probable cause. So I believe it's a Tier 1 encounter, but I also believe that he had reasonable articulable suspicion as to stopping the vehicle. So characterize here as that. Based on the running of the license plate, picture of the entry, inability to confirm the similarity between the person in the picture and the driver, at least from what you can see. So all of those things with the suspended license and so forth, all of those things are reasonable articulable suspicion. In other words, more than a hunch. He has verifiable facts as to why he approach the vehicle. If you want to characterize it as a stop, and certainly have a reasonable suspicion to conduct a stop, a Tier 2 stop, and to confirm or dispel whether the driver of the vehicle is actually Mr. Knowles, who has a suspended license. So,
are you aware of any cases, and I understand this wasn't specifically challenged, but are you aware of any cases dealing with this whole idea of the police being able to just filter through hundreds of license plates randomly at 4 o'clock in the morning? You know what I mean?
Yes, I actually do. I have often wondered that too. Is there any implication of a privacy right or anything in that records? I mean, the answer I came to is no, because there's no expectation of privacy in Department of Motor Vehicle records or photograph those kinds of things once you submit, I guess, for lack of a better word, and fill out your application to obtain a driver's license or those sorts of things. So the answer is no. I don't think they're the constitutional issue. Could you pass the statute that says you may not check a vehicle's driver's license or run a license plate without some reasonable articulable suspicion to do so? I can guess. In other words, you can provide more protection, but the floor would be there's no reasonable expectation of privacy in that kind of police conduct. That would be my answer. With respect to the ineffective claim, counsel pointed out the third one, which my understanding of the record is that there was a complaint at the initial hearing that one of the prior convictions was not certified. And the state then moved, of course, continuing to obtain the court stamp, the certification or foundation to admit it into evidence. And that was granted by the court. So under the ineffective claim, I think you can reach it. If I'm correct, certainly wrote that in the brief, it's on page 36, 37 of the BOE, if you remember, sir. He didn't contest that the underlying conviction is invalid for any other reason. In other words, that's not me, that's whatever I didn't have counsel, none of those things were challenged, only the lack of certification of the foundation challenge. So you could never show on an ineffective claim that he was prejudiced by the continuance to allow certification, because you can never show the outcome would have been different.
Do you think that whatever the discussions was in the sidebars are relevant to our consideration of the
action? I don't recall that, Your Honor, to be honest with you, whether it wasn't of record, but if it was not
record,
then the answer is it is irrelevant. If it's not a record, the court can't consider sidebar discussion. That's why it can be pretty dangerous for both the prosecution and the defense to have those
fights. But it may be necessary for attorney to discuss.
Yeah, I'm not saying that sidebars are not a natural part of the trial or hearing process. I'm not saying that. But be wary, if you're going to be complaining about something, you better have it on the record, other than that, can't guess.
And even if there had been an objection, just overruled, that would be an abuse of discretion, analysis, disposition.
That's correct. That is the standard that's continuing. So with the ineffective claim, and I don't believe it's an abuse of discretion, because there's no complaint that the underlying conviction somehow isn't him or is somehow invalid. It's a foundational objection. Easily correct. the act can show prejudice or that there's an abuse for granting containment of some abuse. A lack of foundation.
Does it make any difference that the state is the law you last want to see?
Well, I would point out to the court that in terms of continuances and remand and rehearing, the state, case of state v. King, was my case, Supreme Court case, it got remanded 3 times for finding a habitual. So I would posit that case and say if that's possible, granting a continuance to obtain a certification of a document, can't be on the discretion. Thank you. No further questions, we have to move to the moment.
Thank you very much. I believe Mr. P is out of
time. Yes, he is.
Thank you, the case is
submitted. Thank you.
Our next case is the right interest of Cicely.